we're very close to Passover. I thought it would be a good opportunity to look back to the events surrounding the first Passover in Egypt. I don't know if you realize that the Passover was the end of a series of tremendous events that took place almost over a year. These events took place at the end of almost over 200 years that the Israelites were in Egypt. I did a sermon some time ago where I talked about Joseph, in which I explained how about 70 people of Israel ended up in Egypt about 200 years before. Joseph became the second ruler after Pharaoh, and Pharaoh allowed the Israelites to settle in the Nile Delta, the land of Goshen, as it was called. And if you turn to Exodus chapter 1, a certain amount of time had passed. Joseph had died, and the Pharaoh who he served had also died. And in chapter 1 verse 8 he says that now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph, did not realize what Joseph had done. And he said to his people, "Look, the children of Israel are more and mightier than we." They had a lot of children. "Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply and it all also happen in the event of war that they join with our enemies and fight against us." So they set taskmasters over them and they gradually put them into slavery. And they got them working on building their many cities, some of which we can even see now. But despite this work, the Israelites only got stronger, and despite the oppression. So in verse 16, he said, "When you do the duties of a midwife for the Hebrew women and see them on the birth stools, if it is a son, you shall kill him, but if it is a daughter, then she shall live." But the midwives feared God and did not do that. So in verse 22, Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, "Every son who is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive." Because the midwives wouldn't kill the children, he got all his people to kill the Israelites' boys. So probably a whole generation was killed. And you know the story of Moses being miraculously preserved. His sister put her in the basket. You'll read in chapter 2. And the daughter of Pharaoh in verse 5 came down to bathe in the river, and the maidens walked along the riverside. When she saw the ark among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it. And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby wept. So she had compassion on it. He said, "This is one of the Hebrew children." So this act of taking Moses into her family eventually destroyed her people, although God waited a long time before he took action. You remember Moses killed an Egyptian and had to flee, and he was in the land of Midian for 40 years. Well, he was 40 years old when he fled, and he was in the land of Midian for 40 years. So God didn't take any action until the Pharaoh at that time died. And in verse 23 of chapter 2, verse 23 says, knowing it happened in the process of time that the king of Egypt died, and also presumably the lady who, the princess who raised Moses, also was dead. And then God started to act and call Moses. Remember, he was very reluctant, and eventually God has to send his brother Aaron with him to speak to Pharaoh. So Aaron became Moses' spokesman. So you move over to chapter 5, verse 1. Afterwards, Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, "Thus says the Lord God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness." So it was one of God's feast days. And of course the Pharaoh refused, didn't really know who Moses was, didn't remember Joseph or anything that he'd done. So all they did was oppress the Israelites, and things got worse. And finally in Exodus 7, verse 1, "So the Lord said to Moses, see, I have made you as God to Pharaoh, and Aaron your brother shall be your prophet. You shall speak all that I command you, and Aaron your brother shall tell Pharaoh to send the children of Israel out of his land. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart and multiply my signs, my wonders in the land of Egypt. But Pharaoh will not heed you, so that I may lay my hand on Egypt and bring my armies and my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great judgments." Israel was going to be judged for killing all those children. So the first plague starts. I do have a handout which is available for people who want it, of all the plagues. But the first plague you'll find in Exodus 7 verse 15. And it's very appropriate that it was on the Nile. Verse 15 says, "Go to Pharaoh in the morning when he goes out to the water. You shall stand by the river's bank to meet him. The rod which turned to a serpent you shall take in your hand." The Pharaoh apparently went to the Nile to celebrate the overflowing of the river. You've got to remember that before they built the Aswan Dam in the 1970s, the Nile River used to flood annually across Egypt, and it deposited a great layer of silt brought down from the highlands of Africa. And this was very important for the fertility of the Nile. And Pharaoh went to the Nile to celebrate this overflowing of the river on June the 12th. It was a religious ceremony. As the river rose, it changed colour from clear to yellow and then to red due to the presence of these microscopic organisms and all the stuff that was brought down. The Nile River was worshipped under the name of Hapi, H-A-P-I, or Apis, the sacred bull representing Osiris. This was the bull that the Israelites worshipped in the wilderness. Hapi was the god of annual flooding. It was another name for Nimrod, the founder of Egypt. As I say, the river changed colour, but in verse 17, the colour it changed here was blood. It says, "Thus said the Lord, by this you shall know that I am the Lord. Behold, I will strike the waters which are in the river with the rod that is in mine hand, and they shall be turned to blood, and the fish that are in the river shall die. The river shall stink." The Egyptians have always been very dependent on fish from the river as well as for protein. So there was blood. It wasn't just in the river, it was in the water jugs and everything. It all turned to blood, which is the first punishment on Israel. In chapter 8, verse 1 to 15, the second plague was a plague of frogs, attacking the frog god, H-E-G-T, the frog god, which represented, ironically, good fortune and resurrection, and they were up to their necks in good fortune and resurrection. So this, what the ten plagues were attack on the gods of Egypt. In chapter 8, verse 16 to 19, which I won't read, was the plague of lice, which came from the earth. This was an attack on the god Seb, S-E-B, protector of the earth. This took place probably in late September or early October. The fourth plague, which you'll find in verse 20 onwards of chapter 8, was of flies or beetles. It's not precisely known which it was. The fly was worshipped as Beelzebub. The beetle represents Chetera. The sun god as creation is shown with the head of a beetle. So it's important to note that this, if you note down in verse 23, I will make a difference between my people and your people. Tomorrow this sign shall be. Because this is where the Israelites started to get protection from God. The fifth plague, in chapter 9, verses 1 to 7, the fifth plague was the death of beasts. The Egyptian worshipped the bull Apis. This was what they were worshipping at Mount Sinai. And beast represented a great economic importance to all the farmers. So this was an attack on the economy. The sixth plague, again in chapter 9, verses 8 to 12, was the plague of boils. At this point, the magicians had been matching Moses and Aaron with some of their miracles, but in verse 11, chapter 9, he says, and the Egyptians could not stand before Moses because of the boils, for the boils were on the Egyptians and on the magicians and all the Egyptians. So the magicians failed at this point. This was an attack on Imhotep, the god of medicine. In the seventh plague was the next plague, again in Exodus 9, verse 13 to 35. This was a plague of hail. God gave a warning through Moses, and some Egyptians, if you read in verse 20, says, he who feared the word of the Lord among the servants of Pharaoh made his servants and his livestock flee to the houses. So some of the Egyptians were starting to respond to these plagues. And these were probably the people who were the mixed multitude who left Egypt with Israel. And they got the message. This was probably about February, and the god attack was Reshpu, who was the god of storms. In Exodus 10 we have the eighth plague, The eighth plague was of locusts. Locusts are a common problem in Africa, and they pretty well destroyed what was left of the plants and the trees, which hadn't been destroyed by the hail and the other events, including the wheat and the spelt, which were the main crops in Egypt. So they were really being left without food. In a sense, this was a reversal of what Joseph had done. Pharaoh tried to negotiate that only the men could go and worship God at the feast. But this, God wasn't having that. This probably took place in March. So the plagues were getting closer together in sequence. The ninth plague, which is in chapter 10, verses 21 to 28, was a plague of darkness. It was actually attacked on their main god, called Ra, the sun god. Because, of course, Egypt is known for its sun. The darkness was equivalent to a severe sandstorm which obscures everything. And this really caused the Pharaoh to panic. But he was still, if you read the verses, he was still negotiating. He would let the people go, but he wouldn't let the animals go. He was sacrificing animals because they had so many animals of gods was an abomination to the Egyptians. In this plague, the various gods were attacked. Ra, the creator god of the sun. Horus, the second god of the noonday sun. Thoth, placed the stars, moon and sun, gave light to the earth. And Set, Hemet, was the goddess of fire and artificial light. Were in fact over 2,000 gods that the Egyptians worshipped. The plague of darkness would have taken place in March, April. As I say, the events are coming very close to each other. And the Egyptian economy was totally destroyed. The tenth and final plague was an attack on a whole series of gods. The firstborn was sacred to Ra. He was supposed to come to earth in the form of the firstborn of a cow. The ram was sacred to Ra. So putting the blood of kids and lambs on the doorposts for protection was blasphemy to Ra and merited the death penalty. But it proved that the children of Israel trusted God and submitted to God for protection. Other gods attacked in this plague included Meshmet, the goddess of birth, Hathor, the protector of the firstborn, Min, the god of virility and generation, and Amon-Ra, who gave Ra's power to those who worshipped him. This tenth plague showed the true God had power over the universe. Not only was the tenth plague an attack on the gods of Egypt, but also an attack on the society. Because, as in England, the firstborn were the ones who inherited when the parents died. So it destroyed the inheritance system. This was the God's final punishment for the murder of those innocent children. So what do we learn from these ten plagues? In the book of Exodus. Firstly, God was executing judgment on Egypt for the slavery and murders committed. Secondly, God was going to persuade the Egyptians to let Israel go. Thirdly, God was showing that he was God and not one of the gods of the Egyptians. This was also a message to Israel. You've got to remember that they'd lived for 200 years under this pagan system. In the 10th plague, the Israelites had to show their faith and belief by performing certain actions. This is the only plague where Israel had to take action. God was trying to wean them off this pagan system, showing that these pagan gods were useless. And as the example of the bull in the wilderness showed, it was a very difficult job. For us, our battle is a spiritual battle. We have to be weaned off this world system. If you turn over to Ephesians 6 verse 12. Ephesians 6 verse 12. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places. And then he talks about the need for the armour of God in verses 14 to 18. We all have a choice, just as the Israelites did. Did they trust God and put the blood on the doorposts and stay in their houses as they were told to do? Or did they go out with the Egyptians? Romans 6, verse 16. Do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one slaves whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or of obedience leading to righteousness? You will see from Exodus 13 that the firstborn of Israel, both man and beast, belonged to God after this. And they had to redeem the animals from God as Israel became a nation. Israel became God's firstborn at this time. In Exodus 13, verse 13. But every firstborn of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb, and if you shall not redeem it, then you shall break its neck. And all the firstborn of man among your sons you shall redeem, which is a picture, of course, of our being redeemed by Christ. We are part of the firstborn of God, and we have been redeemed by Christ. This is the most important point. The first Passover in the Old Testament was the beginning of God's covenant with Israel as a nation. For us, the New Testament Passover is our annual renewal of our covenant with God. We need to consider, before we take the Passover, our commitment to God. Thank you.